Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The following big interview was posted in full for our socios, our members, our friends, our supporters at patreon.com/GrahamHunter. And that was last season, 2019-20. Sign up there and you'll get every interview we produce before it's released on the main feed, plus the chance to put questions to our guests and to me via the monthly Q&A. You'll also get bonus content every month, including the audio versions of my regular columns for ESPN. And what's more, you'll be supporting us. You'll be keeping this independent podcast on the road. Thank you. There'll be cynics amongst you who think that the brilliant Eniola Aluko, title winner in Italy, is only on the big interview because her brilliant brother, Sonny Aluko, played for the mighty Dandies and scored in a 2-2 draw with Bayern Munich. No, no. I can't even attest that Aberdeen gets mentioned at all. Okay, it comes up a couple of times. But the reason that Eni and I met at Juventus training ground, Lenovo, just outside Turin, and talked about life in that city and work at this monumental institution of a football club is that after a hugely successful career winning just about everything that there is to win, she decided on another challenge in Serie A, women's Serie A, where Juve are not but a two-year-old club. She arrives, she helps make them champions again, but now she gives to us a brilliant perspective on the impact of and stories behind the 2019 World Cup. You're right, she was broadcasting it, not playing in it. Eni Aluko, double winner in Italy and England for Chelsea, lawyer, pioneer, brilliant analyst. She's a perfect fit for the big interview. It's not often that we record the big interview abroad, but that's not the reason for my excitement today, nor is the fact that we're speaking to the sister of an Aberdeen legend. But that is true. No, we're with Eni Aluko, who is, well, amongst many other things, newly champion of Italy. And I adore sportsmen and women who take risks, particularly cultural risks, and then go and succeed. So Eni, one, thank you for receiving me and our gypsy band here in the Juventus Training Centre.
Benvenuti.
Now listen, before we even start the interview, I had to laugh when we were communicating via Twitter because I can't speak Italian, but I hear phrases and I wrote them down phonetically and your answer came back absolutely in beautiful Italian. I went, okay, there's a learning lesson for me already. We might be here to talk about your book, They Don't Teach This, but you've taught me already how to improve my Italian. How is your Italian? And don't be modest.
It's okay. It's okay. I think after 1 year, it's taken time. But I can, the way I judge it is how I can operate in sort of everyday situations with the coach or with the teammates or in a taxi or in a restaurant. I think I'm very comfortable in all of those situations now, whereas when I first arrived, the first 6 months, I was sometimes afraid to sort of speak to the taxi driver in case he, you know, I didn't understand or I didn't understand everything the coach was saying. Now I feel pretty much comfortable with everything the coach is saying, with communicating with my teammates, with ordering at a restaurant. So I feel good, but there's still a lot to learn, because I've got to still think before, you know, I still make mistakes, like just a minute ago when I said bentornati or benvenuti. I know what I want to say, but sometimes...
Bentornati was welcome.
Bentornati is
happy returns, yeah.
So
in that case, you've twice now already struck on something that I think is gold, because in the book you explain how with your Nigerian heritage, and you consider there's a hyphen, British-Nigerian, occasionally you must feel Nigerian-British, but there's a moment where you quickly pick up the language that your parents are speaking, and you're extremely sharp at understanding and teaching yourself before you've even been probably taught anything at primary school. And therefore, you seem to have a linguistic ability, but you said, at the beginning I was a bit afraid. When you're brought up in Britain, what I understand is that most people are taught to be afraid of trying something in a foreign language.
Absolutely.
We're taught to be embarrassed for no good reason whatsoever. But did you have to conquer that at all?
Well, that's a really great point, because I think actually when you travel around the world, which I love to do, you find that people are much more advanced in their knowledge of other languages. So, for example, people are better at speaking English than English, you know, British kids are at speaking other languages. So I just think it's a cultural thing, really, that, you know, we take for granted the fact that we can speak English. And when I was younger, I mean, there's two levels to it. The surface level is that no one around me was speaking any other language apart from Brummie. And I just, you know, I wanted to fit in, and so I wasn't interested in being different. But behind closed doors, obviously I'd hear my mom speaking to my relatives or to my dad, or and I was curious to what she was saying, so I was trying to pick up what she was saying, and eventually just understood. But that's not to say that I was actually that engaged in wanting to understand Yoruba language at all. I just wanted to understand what my mum was saying. So it was almost accidental in a way. And now I've started learning a new language. I think it's much harder when you get older. I think it's much more important to do it when you're younger. But there's a quickness to me learning certain things, because Yoruba and Italian are quite similar phonetically in the O's and A's, and it's very expressive. And
so that's just, it isn't identical, but it's a useful bridge to retention or ease of pronunciation, for example.
Yes, exactly.
Well, okay, that's only a small part of the rainbow experience that is living abroad. And living abroad is very good if you win the title and you're successful.
Yes.
Thank God it went that way. But I, looking now back at the decision you made about, I presume, leaving or parking aside your flourishing law career to come here to play at Juventus in a relatively new, not franchise, but team, although an historic club, second year of Juventus. You looked at, presumably, language, temperature, food, culture, as well as football. Between what you were weighing up then, looking at the adventure and saying yes and sacrificing things, to where you are now, how has it gone?
Well, I honestly feel like I couldn't lose in making the decision. You can only gain both good and bad from stepping out of your comfort zone. And I was very much in a comfort zone at Chelsea. After 6 years, won, you know, everything there was to win, probably aside from the Champions League. You know, was well loved by the fans, have friends there who are teammates, but I wasn't playing and I was just going through the motions. On Chelsea's side, I'm not sure whether they wanted to offer me a new contract or not. We never really got that far. So it was a bit of a limbo situation. And I was like, well, you know, what can I do next that's going to inspire me, that's going to bring out the best in me again, that's going to make me develop, that's going to make me just wake up every day excited? And I think the only option at that point, it certainly wasn't moving to another club in England. It was moving abroad. I'd already had a taster of it in America, but the American experience, aside from the fact that I grew a lot as a football player, was so unstable because of the trade process. You have no control whatsoever over your own destiny. So I didn't like that side of it. So I had a lot more control this time of saying, okay, I want to go somewhere where I'm going to grow and I'm going to play and I'm going to, you know, explore. And I love traveling anyway. I'm quite a curious traveler anyway. So coming to Italy was only going to be a win-win in terms of the decision. And then when I got here, obviously you have difficult days, you know, where you don't understand what anyone's saying. In training, a lot of the time, you know, I've said it many times that the coach Rita is, for me, the best technical coach I've had in my career.
That's inspirational.
Extremely technical. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the drills, I was like, oh, what's going on? Where do I move? What do I... So I was the one that was failing in a lot of the drills. And no one wants to be that player that people are looking at going, oh, you know, the international player. So there was difficult moments, you know, in training, on the pitch and off the pitch. But again, it was all just bringing out the qualities that I needed to grow, like concentration and, you know, listening and understanding a new language. You know, I like to talk, but actually I had to learn how to listen again. And so I can only say it's just a positive.
You know, like being challenged. That comes out.
I like
some
being
of the challenges in your
yeah.
life that you haven't sought. They've been landed on you.
Yeah.
But it seems to have been a life of pretty constant challenging. And when you reach out for a decision, you almost always go, yeah, I can do that, or I'll take that on, or
I
never damn the consequences, because you often fall back in your faith, which is deep and it's really important to you. I've either heard you saying or read you talking about there's also a slightly different culture about what doing it right is or what acceptable is. The level of how much is demanded of the success rate or application in these drills.
Yeah, again, I think Rita Galeno, she is particularly specific on technical drills. So, for example, she will say, I want you to touch the ball with the outside of your big toe, which sounds a little bit pedantic, but that actually moves the ball in a certain way, as opposed to just touching it with the...
There's a purpose.
There's a purpose to it. So you could probably get away with not doing it that specifically right, but she will stop you in a session and say, no, this is what it is, and show you how to do it perfectly. So it's that level of specificity and demand that I think I needed to grow, even at 31.
Can I ask, without being rude, the first time she stopped you and corrected you, whatever, was there a... With your level of experience and success, was there a level of, I know how to play?
That's a really great question, because I think that was a decision too, like for me, in terms of saying, okay, I've won everything there is to win at one of the biggest clubs at Chelsea in Europe. I could have come to Juventus and said, oh, I've done it. But actually, I made a conscious decision to be really humble about that and just be like, if I don't know it, I don't know it, and ask questions and speak to the coach about what she feels I can do and learn. And so I never felt like when I was stopped in a session, like, oh, ego, you know, and that can happen.
We both know, male game, female game.
Yeah.
And almost footballers, sports people kind of need that, a version of that ego to survive, to thrive. But you also have to have it in check, and you also have to open your ears and say, I'm being taught here. But not everybody takes well to it, and that's a fact.
Yeah, and I think I spotted early on that it's pretty fair. I mean, it's not kind of, oh, I'm only going to coach any, because if you're doing it wrong, you're doing it wrong, and she will stop you. And so, you know, I always saw it as just trying to develop me and help me. No one's the finished product. I think even if you go over to Continassa and see Ronaldo, you know, he'll be still working on his craft. So who the hell am I to be like, oh, you know? So I enjoyed that side of it, actually. I still enjoy that side of it, of the coach saying, maybe do this, or maybe, particularly in an environment I've never been in before.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more.
One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Talking about environments, I suppose one of the thrilling things about Serie A for your team is that, albeit you're champion, you were challenged. You found Milan, a topsy-turvy battle, a defeat. But my attention goes on. I know the feeling between, generally, historically, between Juve and Fiorentina.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a fluke that Fiorentina have a wonderful Scottish player playing for them. And sadly, as a Scot, I have to admit that you got the better of Fiorentina, but apart from helping you win the double, keeping them at bay in the Scudetto, you have big crowds as well. Emblematic of your first year in Italy in football terms, that Juve-Fiorentina thing must be quite special.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously know about rivalries. You know, we had it with Arsenal at Chelsea and
City over the
Manchester
years.
City. That was, I mean, I think the word's probably hatred, you know.
I was going to say it got personal.
I understand. I actually liked to see the level of animosity because I think you need that in a championship race. But one of the reasons why I really was interested in Juventus as well was because of the development of women's football in this country and the fact that Juventus were pushing that and leading that. I think Fiorentina were before Juventus, so these are two big teams trying to push the game forward.
Yeah.
So, you know, when we played at the Alliance, 39,000 people, yes, it was a rivalry, but it was a win for everybody. Even Fiorentina players, they wrote about it in a way that made them recognise it was bigger than just the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, that's why I came here. You know, I wanted to be part of a project that was helping to improve the game in Italy.
Because it's an anomaly. Male football and female football is not identical, but it is anomalous that we were thinking about all the teams we've watched, Neil and I, both club and internationally, while women's football has been on our consciousness. So going a reasonable way back, Italy's never been part of that.
No.
The Scandinavians, the Dutch, the French, England, USA.
Yeah.
But even the fact we're acknowledging that Milan is a new club for women, that Juve, Fiorentina. So what you commented there about the need to help a development thing, it's a really big thing in terms of not just Italian football, but European football.
I mean, there's been teams, Brescia were a successful women's team in Italy and were somewhat successful in the Champions League. But their name is Brescia. It's not a global brand.
No.
So I think one of the things that's really helping women's football globally is the fact that these big brand names of clubs are now having successful women's teams. So people go, of course, I'll come to the game. I think that helps. But I think there has been past history from Italian teams, but now it's a whole new level when you've got Juventus, AC Milan, Inter Milan, Fiorentina, Roma, all with big women's programs. It just lifts the perception and the standard of the game.
And it kind of feels it was meant, because to complete the double, which is historically very significant here, it's Juve Fiorentina.
Yeah.
And I suppose that triumph, that lift moment, because you've had, you know, as you explain, and they don't teach this, you've had some brutal final day or cup final moments.
Yes.
So does it change? Does it feel sweeter when you take a risk, you make an adventure, you go abroad, and the final to complete the double is against your biggest rival?
Honestly, I didn't come to Juventus with much expectation in terms of winning the trophies. I didn't want to put too much pressure on that. First for myself, and just in general, I thought, okay, I just want to play and see how it goes. I think it helped that Juventus had already won the league the year before, so it was already a successful team that were hungry to do more. But from a personal point of view, honestly, I think if we didn't win the double, I still would have felt like I'd gained something from the experience. However, being able to look at a trophy and say, in 2019, that's what I won when I was in Italy, that helps. So it was kind of, you know, it was a bonus, really. And doing it in a way that showed that the Italian league was quite tight. There was games we lost and we had to win it on the last day, and all of those things make for a great great experience and title race.
We've so much to talk about that I have to naturally go back to the big theme, which is Aberdeen.
Yeah.
See, I'm really glad that even in our first chat you kept my stupid sense of humour. But Dennis Law is the only Scottish Ballon d'Or winner. He came to the city, to Torino. Wrong club, sorry for mentioning them. But him and Joe Baker didn't enjoy the experience. So I need to finalise this section by saying to you, you're allowed to have positive, negative about life in Torino, life in Italy. Two things you really love, aside from the football. Two things that might take a little bit of getting used to.
In terms of things I love, I think most Italian cities have a lot of history to them. So love that about every Italian city I've visited so far. Turin definitely fits into that. And there's something quite quaint about just little things like having to go to the market to get vegetables and fruit, you know, rather than going to
one of the things
market.
I'd have picked about life in Spain.
You like, you
fresh
know what
fruit,
I mean, like
fish, just vegetables, and just it's a communal experience too.
Right, just like I live. Last year, I lived like 2 minutes from a huge market in Torino, and I just used to love just the atmosphere of walking past it. You know,
smells and
the smells,
the colours
and
as
the
well.
Culture, and it was quite multicultural as well. But in terms of things I don't like, I think the city is quite slow. So, for example, if I want to, you know, one of the things I love doing in London is going for brunch with mates in central London or in Shoreditch or something. You can't really do that here because everything's closed between 12 and 7 o'clock. Yeah. So there's a lot of idle time that I've had to kind of figure out how to fill. And if anyone knows me well, I'm not an idle person at all. I'm not the person that's going to sit at home and play PlayStation. So that was difficult because there was a lot of lonely kind of down moments that you just think, oh, okay, well, if I'm not at the training ground, what am I doing? You know, I like to have a social life outside of the field. But again, I kind of expected that. Mm. And then I think just in terms of like the multicultural nature of, again, London's my reference and I try not to make too many comparisons, but I like what I like. And just in terms of just the multiculturalism of Torino is not really there. Mm-hmm. When I visited Milan, I could see a bit more people from different parts of the world and in Rome. But I don't really get that vibe from Turin.
No.
So that's been a little difficult because you've kind of always seen that like, you can't really bounce off other people that, you know, maybe from may also be expats doing different things in the city. Mm. So
that's when you moved, you were ready for differences. You weren't naive in any sense. You knew.
Yeah.
But you know, by definition, when you change, things are different, and it's good for us, I think, to be tested in all kinds of way.
Yeah, I mean, I came here to play football. So once that, if that's going well, I'm okay. But I just happen to be the person that likes to, you know, do different things and, you know, have different experiences in the city. And I just haven't really found that rhythm yet.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to find it. Like just going to like live music nights or different types of restaurants or, as I said, going to brunch at the middle of the day, it's kind of difficult because everywhere's closed. So there's a slower pace of the city that I'm not really quite used to.
Undoubtedly it'll evolve and there'll be times if you keep winning trophies where you can't go around the city. We're all, any of us who've got an interest, a passion, a growing interest in women's football, it's impossible not to be euphoric about what the summer brought. It's the culmination of many, many years. There have been many tournaments that from an English women's football perspective have been interesting or inspirational before, but it did feel as if everybody's anticipation that the profile of women's football, that the quality, that the coaching, the degree of players who are now professional, and that changes you whether you're a man or woman, it changes everything you can achieve on the pitch and how regularly you can hit peak levels. But the audience, it's been an epiphany. This summer has been, I mean, genuinely euphoric and extraordinary. You must feel deeply satisfied.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the game is where we all dreamed it would be. It could be in when I was growing up, certainly. And as the semi-professional game started growing, we all dreamed that it could be where it is now. So I'm literally sort of seeing what I had conversations about 10 years ago, like, oh, if only we could fill out stadiums. If only, you know, broadcasters would put us on every week, which Sky is now doing in Italy. You know, if only, I don't know, VAR could, you know, what happens in the men's game can happen in the women's game. And all of that's happening. And I think the World Cup demonstrated that. You know, it's certainly an appetite for women's football. I think that was always the excuse before, was that, oh, you know, people don't want to watch it. Well, a lot more people are watching the World Cup than watch the Men's World Cup.
So, for example, the England team, which did so well, and again, it came so close, which is a story we've had to swallow for a long time. And also then, you know, the final and the semi-final, the fact that Netherlands were popular, yeah. that USA are a brand name in the UK. Yeah. We're largely talking for the moment about the reception in the UK of the World Cup, I guess, but it's the same the world over.
I've asked some of the players here, like, how they, you know, how they felt about sort of, Italy as a nation, how they received the women's team. Obviously, the men didn't play in 2018, so it was a huge opportunity for the women to kind of incite that national pride again, and they definitely did that. And I think Italy were pretty much underestimated. No one really knew, you know, the players or, you know, how good the league was, and so for them to get to the quarterfinal was a huge kind of statement for Italian women's football. And I think all the fans really engaged with the women's team. And that's the story, I think, for a lot of teams around the world. I was working for Fox.
Yeah.
And doing American TV with them. On one of the nights, we did Brazil-France. I think, yeah, Brazil-France. 25 million people watched in Brazil.
It's a fabulous
that's
audience.
That's nuts. Like, women, you know, and in Brazil, they don't have a women's league. Mm-hmm. They don't, you know, notoriously, the federation's still quite far behind. But 25 million people are tuning in.
I do hope you enjoyed that big interview, which was first released as an exclusive to our socios, our members who support us. If you'd like to get these interviews on the first day they're available, it's time for you to join us, to become a socio, and for only £2.99 per month, you'll get all our content entirely ad-free and ahead of its release on the main feed. Please go to patreon.com/GrahamHunter to unlock our entire archive. By joining us, you will help support this independent podcast, and we'll blow virtual kisses towards you. Thank you.